welcome to the Dividing Line. Yeah, we're back. It's I noticed the tribbles have not moved a bit since I left. I forgot to grab the someone gave me the little Borg sphere that came out of the Borg cube in First Contact. I forgot to. Well, I think it might be in my bag. I'm not sure. When you get back from nearly 17 days overseas, everything is just. The first day, by the way, if anyone wonders what it's like to cross all those time zones, the first day, actually, you feel pretty good. Slept like a rock last night because I had a 31-hour-long day. And the rough thing is tonight and tomorrow. Now, I don't know if that's just because I'm getting old and everything takes longer to start hurting or go bad or something. I don't know. But, yeah, that's sort of how it works. I'm hearing weird things. What are you doing out there? I don't know. He disappeared. Don't know what's happening. But anyways, Dr. Oakley has no Coogee on. It's 93 degrees in Phoenix. Why in the world would I be wearing a sweater? That would be sort of – that'd be weird. So anyway, back from the trip, but I'd like to hold off on reporting on that until the end of the program because I do – there's some really important stuff. And if you're a – if you're a supporter of the ministry, if you think what we're doing is important, and once again, being overseas, lots of folks talk about the Dividing Line and what it's meant to them and how it's helped them. So please listen through to the end. We've got some important stuff to talk about then. But wanted to catch up on some stuff. We've got the Gorsuch stuff going on. Fascinating show. That's really a modern thing. Most of the in history, there hasn't been this much emphasis upon the Senate hearings for nominees and stuff like that. Now it's become ever since the Bork nomination, it's turned into a circus. But the left turns everything into a circus because that's what the left's all about. Got a couple things I want to look at. Just three things, and then we'll talk about the trip a little bit, about what's going on. Where do we go first? Let's talk about an article that I saw today on the Aquila Report. Is Tim Keller about to have his Rod Dreher moment? And what caught my attention about this was the fact that I got through about, well, according to my Kindle Voyager, I got 56% of the way through the Benedict option, which is a book that is getting a lot of press, especially since Albert Mohler interviewed the author. And I listened to that and then started reading the book. Since I'm only 56% of the way through, I don't want to say too much about it. I'm not sure if I'm going to have time to sit down and just read through the rest of it, or if I'm just going to pick it up at that point, record to MP3, listen to it on a long ride or something along those lines. But it's a fascinating book, and this particular issue that's raised in this article is about Tim Keller going to speak. Tim Keller, the PCA pastor of Redeemer Church in New York City, et cetera, likely needs no introduction, though he has his critics, myself among them. This is D.G. Hart writing this. He is generally the darling of evangelical gatekeepers, the new Calvinists, and PCA church planters. His reputation is that of an apologist who persuades skeptical New Yorkers to give Christianity another chance. Add to that his inspirational exhortation to evangelicals to revitalize the city, read New York City. If Keller were talking about or ministering from Chicago, I doubt he'd be all that in demand. So impressive has Keller been that even Princeton Theological Seminary has invited him to give the annual Kuiper Lecture and award him its prize of Reformed Theology in Public Life. The oldest mainline, for some read liberal, Presbyterian seminary, is bestowing its blessing on what used to be regarded as a sectarian fundamentalist, that is, someone who left the Protestant mainline for a conservative denomination. But this is where it gets dicey. Keller's commune in the PCA does not ordain women, nor does it recognize sexual orientation rights. I guess that's the new phrase now, is sexual orientation rights. Over these matters, Keller could face the kind of reception that Charles Murray recently did at Middlebury College. Let's see, what is the Okay, here's just a comment. It doesn't even say who the commentary is here, but I'll let others argue finer points of Reverend Keller's theology. Hello, this is Princeton Theological Seminary here. Arguing finer points is what we do. My personal soapbox is much less refined. It boils down to this. An institution designed to train men and women for ministry shouldn't be awarding fancy prizes to someone who believes half the student body, or is it more than half, has no business leading churches. It's offensive. Man, my thingy here, it just doesn't want to leave the text where it's supposed to be. It's offensive, and as I have taught my 4- and 5-year-olds to express, it hurts my feelings. This is a giant lecture with a giant whoop-de-doo factor. There's a place for common ground, but unless the Reverend Tim Keller is prepared to argue for the ordination of all the women students of Princeton Theological Seminary, the Abraham Kuyper Prize for Excellence in Reformed Theology and Public Life is not that place, in my opinion. Well, I wonder what Abraham Kuyper would have thought about that. But anyway, here's what the Princeton Seminary president said. Our seminary embraces full inclusion for ordained leadership of the church. We clearly stand in, get this, prophetic opposition to the PCA and many other Christian denominations that do not extend, ready for this, the full exercise of spirit-filled gifts for women or those of various sexual orientations. We know that many have been hurt by being excluded from ministry, and we have worked hard to be an affirming place of preparation for service to the church. If you weren't aware of the fact that Princeton has jumped off the cliff, that should pretty much tell you right there. The seminary has many student organizations and several theological centers that bring speakers to campus. While my office issues the official invitations to campus, I don't practice censorship over the choices of these organizations, even when I or the seminary disagree with some of the convictions of these speakers. It is also a core conviction of our seminary to be a serious academic institution that will sometimes bring controversial speakers to campus. Can you imagine that Tim Keller is the controversial speaker? It sounds like someone defending, inviting the KKK. And because from their perspective, it pretty much is the same thing. Be a serious academic institution that will sometimes bring controversial speakers to campus because we refuse to exclude voices within the church. Diversity of theological thought and practice has long been a hallmark of our school, and so we have had a wide variety of featured speakers on campus, including others who come from traditions that do not ordain women or, and man, this thing keeps getting longer, LGBTQ. Now they put a plus afterwards. I guess that's just sort of like, we don't want to put any more, so if you do, we're not discriminating against you. LGBTQ plus. What if they're LGBTQ minus? Is that like A minus? O positive? Yeah, I don't know. Such as many wings of the Protestant Church and bishops of the Orthodox and Roman Catholic communions. And as he points out, note, this is not the president anymore. This is the author. Note that Princeton Seminary stands in, and it says in opposition to the PCA. It's prophetic opposition. What happened to love? Yes, that is, we clearly stand in prophetic opposition to the PCA and many other Christian denominations that do not extend the full exercise of spirit-filled gifts for women or those of various sexual orientations. I don't know. This does bring me to the issue of the Benedict option. I didn't grab my Kindle. What I've read so far, and I blame someone in channel. He's the guy that's always trying to take over channel, but has failed so far to do so. Fellow by the nick of Book in channel, I had seen some stuff in channel, then I started seeing things on Facebook, and then I was linked to the interview between the author and Albert Mohler. And the author is a Eastern Orthodox, member of an Eastern Orthodox church, former Roman Catholic, who became Eastern Orthodox, which is an interesting direction to go, actually. And fundamentally what the Benedict option is going back to the Benedictine order and the rule of St. Benedict. And it's monasticism, asceticism, it's an organized life, a disciplined life. And what is fascinating about it, at the beginning, the hook that grabs you is a pretty much full-on statement that this culture is done. Western culture is finished. We've had our Waterloo. It basically was the Casey decision, and then if that wasn't it, then clearly Obergefell. At that point, the process of the individualization, the statement, and that's why I was going to grab my, and I just forgot to bring it with me. I'm sorry. I was going to grab my Kindle as I had marked these things. But he quotes the Kennedy statement, which I had forgotten about the fact that Kennedy's the guy that got on because Bork didn't. And man, has that changed everything. That accelerated everything in a major way. Major way. You know, the leftists knew they had to stop it, and the lengths they went to. Totally subverted the system. Totally subverted the system. And anyway, Kennedy's statement in the Casey decision that I think was re-quoted in Obergefell, you know, basically identifying human autonomy as the foundational principle of American jurisprudence, which, of course, it was not when there was an American jurisprudence, but there isn't really anymore. So he starts off by basically saying it's done. The battle's been lost, and now what are we going to do? Now, the proposed solutions are troubling. They're troubling, first of all, how you read this book, and I've actually bought two copies for other people because I'd like them to read it, and I'd like to hear if they're hearing the same things I'm hearing, if they're identifying the same things I'm identifying. And I may buy a few more copies for a few other friends and say, you know, when you get the time, as long as you've got a Kindle anyways, take a look at this. And obviously, for me, Benedict and that kind of stuff is problematic. Asceticism, monastic rules, that kind of stuff. Is problematic, but he's basically saying that there is going to need to be a Christian community and Christian communities that are extremely focused upon a disciplined life, a life that is not focused upon individuality but community. And see, that echoes with me, because those of you who've listened, what have I said for a long, long time? I've said the only power that the world is going to have against Christians when, you know, because it looks like if you follow the trends, there is a withdrawing of the hand of restraint against those who hate the gospel. And the only power that the world's going to have against us is our own love for the things of the world. Because that's the only thing they can touch. They can take away our jobs and our homes and our security. They can touch the body. They can't touch the soul. That's all they can do. So if the source of our strength, the source of our commitment the source of our contentment, I'm sorry, is focused upon that which they cannot touch, they can't do anything to us. But obviously, when you look at the church as a whole, that's not where we are. Evangelical churches, nominal, because he uses the term Orthodox Christian, small o, for conservative Roman Catholics, conservative Eastern Orthodox, and conservative evangelicals. He recognizes that the liberals of all three of those branches are pretty much irrelevant. And so there are things that echo with me, because there's no question that those who love the things of the world, they're not going to be able to stand against the onslaught that's coming. They're not going to be able to make the sacrifices that are going to be necessary to remain faithful in the onslaught that is coming our direction. There's no two ways about that. But what's missing so far, and maybe it comes up, but I can't see how it can come up, primarily because of the Eastern Orthodox aspect. What I was going to say earlier, the way you're going to read this book is really going to be dependent upon your eschatology. It really is. I didn't shock me that after I started reading, I saw Michael Brown post a response. And Michael Brown, whether he wants to admit it or not, thinks like a postmillennialist. Really does. If you read his books, it's very much a positive, the revolution will take place, and so on and so forth, idea. And he criticized the book for basically being too much of a downer, in essence. And I would imagine my post-millennial friends will have an allergic reaction to it. Though, at least in my understanding of post-millennialism, a post-millennialist cannot say that a particular expression of culture will be quote-unquote Christianized. The West may fall. The city of Rome fell to the barbarians, and it would have been really hard to be a post-millennialist from, say, 430 onwards for quite some time in the West. So isn't it possible that there could be a God-glorifying destruction of the hedonism and the secularism of the West? Because the secular humanism cannot provide a meaningful foundation for culture. And we are seeing the secular humanists are totalitarians. They have to control what everybody thinks and what everyone rejoices in and celebrates. But what's missing so far is the gospel. Oh, it's been used. But there is such a fundamental difference in how Orthodoxy understands the gospel and the emphases in it, because of a lack of understanding in Orthodox theology of the true deadness of man and sin. That's all there is to it. That's why you don't have the emphasis upon justification and atonement. You have much more emphasis upon theosis and union with Christ and et cetera, et cetera. Just not seeing that yet. And what I also haven't seen is, even though there is a recognition of the totalitarian nature of the secular left, a lot of the attempted suggestions that you go back to when the communists were in power and things like that, the one thing that's missing is the technology that will now be available to those oppressing Christians that was never possessed before. You could turn everything off and go without electricity out in the woods someplace. But now they can watch you there, too. And it just makes me wonder, some of the things I'm reading, just how practical some of these things are in light of, I've used the illustration a number of times, but when I visited the Stasi prison in former East Germany in Berlin, it was not a technological place. If they had had the kind of technology that we have today, it would have been a much more hellish place than it was. Well, now we've got it. And so I'll be interested to see in the rest of what's there, if any of those things are addressed. But one of the key issues for me is the interface I'm seeing in regards to the gospel secondary here instead of being primary. And that, for me, is very, very much problematic. Though I would highly recommend the reading of the book to people. Some people get confused by that. You recommended that book. That doesn't mean I agree with everything in it. If you only read books you agree with, well, then again, given the average person today doesn't read books anymore, you need to read books you don't agree with so you can figure out why you don't. It clarifies your own thought. It's really good for you. So I would highly recommend reading it. And if you don't read it, at least listen to the interview with that Al Mohler did in Thinking in Public on the subject, and will help you to think some of those things through. But that's what this article was saying. The Rod Dreher moment is this idea that, you know, what if Keller shows up at Princeton and they won't even let him speak, like what happened with what's his face? What was that guy's name? I thought it was right there. Oh yeah, Charles Murray. Many of these places that the left just does not care anymore about being straight open in saying we will not allow freedom of speech. Since we identify you as a bigot and your perspectives are evil from our perspective, then we will silence you. We are totalitarians, and we admit it. We're open about it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think he'll get to speak personally, but you never know. You never know. In time. All right. You know what? I had a video here that I was going to take a look at, and I just don't know that I have time because it's just the first day back after 16 and a half days away. You've got a lot of stuff to catch up with. So I'm going to hold that off for. We've got other dividing lines to do. And we'll just use that for one of those issues then, because I need to give you a quick report on what has been going on and sort of bring you up to speed on some things. 40 hours in a plane, not including all the hours in the airports. I know terminals 3 and 5 at Heathrow really well now, really, really well. Starting to recognize a few people. But it is nice to know where you're going, and things like that. Love British Airways. But those guys, they know what they're doing. I got a little luggage thing. You know that luggage thing? Man, that thing works. When I landed, I'm taxiing in Johannesburg. First taxiing at Heathrow, because I went through Heathrow to Johannesburg. Taxiing in Heathrow. And my phone goes off. And here's a little text message that says, your luggage is in such and such London. And it's like, yeah, better than being in Madrid, Spain. You know, that's happened. Land in Johannesburg, same thing happens. Land back in Heathrow, there it is again. Land in Phoenix, it's in Phoenix, Arizona. It's like, cool. And then when you go down to get it, if you turn on the Bluetooth thing, your luggage is 50 feet from you. Your luggage is 40 feet from you. And then it comes around the corner, and there's my luggage. That's nice. If you've ever lost your luggage, it's pretty nice. I got to admit, that's yeah, I don't care if the NSA knows where my luggage is. What, you know, his dirty clothes is in Washington. I don't care. I don't care if the NSA knows. It's irrelevant. Anyway, so that's pretty cool. A lot of people say, why South Africa? I see someone in channel asking about the thing I mentioned to you. Yeah, I am going to Lagos and channel. I am going to address the Marinov situation, just not today. It's too quick after I got back. And besides, we haven't installed the asbestos filters on the lines yet. Because you say anything about Bojidar Marinov, and just be prepared for acid in your face. Because the man just doesn't even know how to be nice to somebody. It's just unbelievable. But anyway. There you go. We'll get to that later on. And that was not the video that I was going to be talking about. That's another issue, but we'll get to it later on. People ask, why South Africa? And, you know, it is still amazing that, you know, I'd had the exchange with Simon Brace, who is now in Potchefstroom at Northwest University, doing Ratio Christi work down there. But he's South African, and we had met when I went to SES for the debate with Michael Brown, and then the debate that didn't happen because we got snowed out, and the debate which wasn't planned on apologetic methodology, that context there. I thought when Rudolf Bassoff contacted me that he was doing so because Simon Brace asked him to. It was just out of the blue. He just contacted out of the blue. And I would not be doing what I'm doing in South Africa without Rudolf. Rudolf must have driven, I don't know, 600-700 kilometers this trip, put 600-700 kilometers on his car, driving me back and forth, and stayed with me. They put us up at the it's called the Sports Village at North. It's now called Northwest University. It's the old historic Christian university called Potchefstroom University. But then after apartheid, the ANC came in and said you can't have a Christian university anymore. We're going to put you together with these other schools, and changed the name to Northwest University. Thankfully, the School of Theology is still there, and great people teaching there, and great bunch of students. And yeah, I have fallen in love with the place, and I've fallen in love with the professors. Prof. Hank Stoker there, is trying his level best to help train ministers in South Africa. There is a tremendous need for the gospel. There's a tremendous amount of false gospel teaching. It's a huge missions field, and there are good churches there. Antioch Bible Church, Tim Cantrell. I've been there pretty much every single time I've gone to South Africa. They just make room for me. They want to have me speak. They want to have me preach. I preached a week ago Sunday night on Titus 2, 11 through 15. And Tim was late getting there. He had been at Shepherd's Conference and had bad jet lag and fell asleep that afternoon, slept for 3 hours. And at 10 minutes, the service starts at 6, 10 minutes after his phone goes off. Where are you? Where am I supposed to be? Church, maybe? Ho! And so he shows up late. And so I made Tim, I'm sorry, I had to mention it, but fully understandable, even though I flew to South Africa on a Sunday, and the guys at Potch had me lecturing 6 hours a day, Monday and Tuesday. I didn't fall asleep. So anyway, but Tim and I love each other. He'll find something to get back at me later on. Anyway, I preached in Titus 2, 11 through 15, found out later on that was the text that was assigned to Tim for his ordination sermon in front of John MacArthur. but I felt tremendous freedom that evening, and I'm not sure if it was Tim or somebody else that said, you know, we're used to you teaching. That was preaching. And I was like, yeah, it was. That was great. So I've gotten to meet individuals down there. We want to get to Durban next time I go down. I haven't seen Adrian and his family down there in Durban in a couple trips, and they're just wonderful Christian people. And I've told this story before. A couple trips back, I was in a small church in Johannesburg, and I had these three university students come up to me, and you know, they said, the only reason we made it through university was because of the dividing line. That's the only reason we kept our faith, because everything we were being told was against what you were saying. But you would respond to those things, and you just don't know how much that means. And so it's not like this is the only place that's the case. But because Rudolf is there, and because I've gotten plugged in at Potch, and because they're willing to have me teach, you know, the Lord's just really bound my heart there. So I spent the first few days there. Yes, I did tweet out about this, and it managed to get through the shadow ban to some people anyways. You can't go there. I mean, even in the rooms at the sports complex are these big mural pictures of a cricket batter. And People in the United States do not understand cricket and rugby. You spend time in Australia, New Zealand, England, and South Africa, all the places I'm going fairly regularly. Wow. And what's really neat is I've now figured out cricket. It took a while. It took a while, but I figured out cricket. And Australia was playing India in a full test match. And I kept turning it on BBC because I wanted to see what was happening. And it's 7 days long. And they take their time out for lunch and tea. And it's just so completely different. But it's a lot of fun to watch. So anyway, I spent the first 2 days lecturing on every subject under the sun for hours at a time, and it was exhausting, but such a blessing to be able to do so. Wednesday I sort of had off, but not really, and I'll tell you why in a second. And then we did more lecturing on Thursday. Friday night, was it Thursday night? Starting to lose track of which day it was, but I went over to Simon Brace's house, the Ratio Christi guys, and for some reason they wanted me to speak on Mormonism. And so earlier in the week, what I did is I said, well, guys, what you want to do is you want to contact the local missions and tell them you're going to have a talk on Mormonism. They will send missionaries. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, I bet you anything. Do it. We had four missionaries show up for that talk. And it was great because, I set up my computer. Obviously, I did more Bible than I normally do in it. Then obviously we know this can't be true because the scriptures say, and here's where the scriptures are in contradiction to what Joseph Smith said, and so on and so forth. So it was much more of a witnessing situation than normal, but got through the whole thing, and the people were very, very thankful. And I didn't go over and mess with the missionaries because they're surrounded by students. They want to have conversations. I'm the big baddie. I stay out of the way and let the students do the witnessing. So that was great. But again, just had a great time at Potch, and then over the weekend had the Worldview Conference with Andy McIntosh, who was the other speaker at the Worldview Conference. He was great. It was really funny. I did a thing on science in the Bible with John Bile at Potch. Then I did Andy McIntosh over the weekend. And here's these two guys that are astronomers. And remember Jason Lyle, when we previewed the Unpopular movie. I'm just finding myself running into these brilliant astro science guys that just have these awesome presentations. And they're all presuppositionalists, and they're all really solid guys. Just really great to see them out there. And it was really, really interesting listening to Andy McIntosh he did a thing on hearing again. And then he also did something on math, the beauty of God's creation and math. And he had a picture of a Mandelbrot fractal up. And I was like, oh, good, he can talk about fractals. He never did. And so afterwards, I said, I'm really disappointed. When I spoke next, I said, I'm really disappointed because he didn't get into fractals. And so I showed off some of my fractals on the screen, and he was like, ah, that's pretty cool. So anyway, we had a great conference. And then I spoke at a Baptist church that's part of the Baptist Union on Sunday morning. And they were pretty packed out. And folks there just are so appreciative of the ministry of the word. They gave me a specific text in John 14 to preach from, and had a great time there with the pastor and his family. When I got in, when I got to his house for lunch after the service, there was a chessboard sitting on the table. And so I put the pieces back where they were supposed to be and all. And he says, so do you, you play chess? I said, this is what I said. I know how the pieces move. So I said, well, we got to play then. So he sits down. Rich is laughing because he knows where this is going to go. And it turns out he's an avid chess player. Had until about 6 months earlier, had been doing a lot of playing online and stuff like that. I haven't played probably in 2 years. But those who know me know that when I was a teenager, well, the guys who went up to Salt Lake will remember the time when we were playing chess over the CB while I was driving, and I didn't have a set. The set was in the car behind. And the only reason I lost the position was because we had a real close pass on the two-lane. It was that going out on the page. We had a real close pass, and it sort of, it was a little hectic. And hectic, by the way, in South Africa means something completely different than it does here. Hectic means dangerous. It's really weird. This is a hectic area of the road. It's like, oh, okay, whatever. Anyhow, so we played, and buy a donkey. That's how you say thank you. Anyways, so we played chess, and yeah, I won. Anyway, so I felt good about that because if you don't get a chance to play for 2 years, you don't get a chance to study openings, stuff like that, you can really get in trouble. But we had a fun time together. And so that'll probably be the only time I get to play chess for another 2 years. But it was enjoyable. Had a great time out. There was a really good spirit at that church, and all of these churches, folks, are just massively mixed churches. I mean, you've got Indians and blacks and whites, and it's it's really neat to see the body functioning in that way. And so then that evening was when I preached at Antioch, and I honestly am starting to lose track of which day was which, but had a great time in Potch. Very quickly, I just want to mention this because I want to get to the important part here. After I left South Africa, and I think that was on, was it Wednesday I flew? I think it was Wednesday I flew Wednesday was my travel day up to Heathrow. What did I do on Monday? I did something on Monday. Oh, well, Tuesday night was the debate at the mosque in Lanesia, with Bashir Vania on the crucifixion. And on Monday, that's right, I spoke at the Baptist Union thing. We were really confused as to what it was supposed to be. We thought it was just going to be sort of a little sit-down thing with a few people, end up being a big presentation. Then we had to rush out of it real quick because we had scheduled a radio interview. And we ended up doing that, and it ended up being a pretty hectic day. When I'm in Joburg, when I'm not at Potter's room, I stay with Damon and Linda at the same place. I've now stayed there. I think this is at least my fourth time. I know every footpath around their neighborhood. They're in a development that's all fenced off. It's got security. I would never go running, and sadly, you just don't go running in South Africa unless you're in a situation like that. So I know everything, every path and every road in that development, and so I got some running done there. And I generally stay in hotels. It's easier for me to rest, but once you get to know a family and you get to know where everything is, they have the perfect room. It has its own bathroom. I'm like I'm at home, and so I can handle that just great, and it's wonderful. Stayed there, and they have a chiropractor in their congregation now. He brought his table over, gave me an adjustment. It was great. It helped me to stay strong. I got 100,000 meters of rowing on this trip. I've never come close to that. Between Potchefstroom, Randburg, and then they had a single Concept 2 rower at the hotel I stayed at. 100,000. That means I'm going to have 1,000,000 meters this season. So I was really happy about that. Keeping the body going, the workouts really help with the stress of travel and sleep and all the rest of that kind of stuff. It makes a big difference. So I was very, very excited about that. So we had a great time there. Then went to London. And let me just mention real quickly, I realize that my Reformed Baptist friends in London don't understand this, but I am so thankful for KT, for Kensington Temple. Yep, they're charismatics, and they know I'm a Reformed Baptist. They love me anyways, and I love them too. They step up. They make things work. Their volunteers go out of their way. And they made the dialogue with Abdullah Al-Andalusi work. on short notice. I had lunch with Abdullah. It was a very interesting conversation, very useful. Then I spoke Sunday night, and even though my MacBook Pro died on me, it's now being repaired for the next 5 days. 3 to 5 days, we'll see. My iPad happened to work, and we did probably the most energy-filled presentation on New Testament reliability ever done. It really was. I mean, it was great. Got folks excited about manuscripts and stuff like that. It was fun. And so Sunday morning, I didn't have anything going on, so I walked. I don't know if I told you about that. I walked to the Metropolitan Tabernacle, and because I was right downtown. I had a great location. I ran around the I and Big Ben and stuff like that again, and had the lunch in my favorite little Mexican place called Tortilla in Trafalgar Square, and did a bunch of stuff around London, and sort of starting to feel like I know what I'm doing around that place. And in fact, I was in the Apple store today, and they had this drone thing in London. And I'm pointing things out to people around me. I'm going, hey, see that thing there? Well, see the, over there, that building there, that's the Royal Horse Guards. And my hotel was right over there. And see up there, there's where Trafalgar Square is. And they're all just going, who is this guy? So it's sort of fun. Did get back to the hotel, and they had a fire alarm. And so I spent an hour waiting to get back into my room after the fire alarm at the hotel. But that does happen when you travel every once in a while. And then an uneventful trip back yesterday, thanks again to British Airways, which does such a wonderful job. So that was my time in London. So with all that said, back to something really important, and this is what I want to talk about with our supporters, for those who support this work and support the ministry. I mentioned that I did something on Wednesday when I was at Potch. And what that was I met with Dr. Yuri Yordan. Dr. Yordan teaches New Testament. Actually, he's retired now, actually. But he's still deeply involved in translation work and Bible translation work there in South Africa. There's a lot of Bible translation work that needs to be done. The number of languages there is astronomical. It's amazing. All the dialects and things like that. And I had met with Dr. Yordan each time that I had gone the past two times out to Patras Room. And last year when I came back in May, I made mention of a project. And a number of you helped to, I would put things on the ministry resource list, and a number of you helped us to obtain a number of those resources. This was all in preparation for what I've been talking with Dr. Yordan about now for a little while. And as of last week, I didn't bring it in with me. I was actually going to hold it up. But as of last week, I am now fully registered in the PhD program at Potras Room, working with Dr. Yordan as my doctoral advisor, doing a PhD in New Testament, specifically in New Testament textual criticism. Why all the way down there? Because Dr. Yordan did his PhD in textual criticism under Bruce Metzger at Princeton Seminary. Now, some of you automatically know why that is so relevant. Bart Ehrman was Metzger's last PhD student. Dr. Yordan was before him by about 15, 20 years. The project that we are working on, we are both very, very excited about. I can only say it's divine direction, in the sense that I had never encountered any discussion of this particular manuscript's value in giving us a light into the earliest period of the text of the New Testament. It's not a manuscript that is normally put forward as being one of the most important, and I'm referring to Papyrus 45, P45, which is a Gospels and Acts manuscript. That in and of itself makes it unusual. It is about 220 pages originally. We, to this day, have portions, only portions, sometimes small portions, of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. Just portions. Now, most of you know I've already been working on this project because the sermon series I'm doing at PRBC right now is based on P45. Most unusual sermon series ever imagined, I think, where we are covering chapters that are found in P45. So right now, the section in John 10, that's one of the leaves of that manuscript. And so I provide the picture, the graphic, and on the back my translation of it. And we're going to be doing every chapter that is referenced in P45. So obviously, last year when I met with Dr. Yordan, my thought was to focus upon the Markan portion as part of not only a translation of Mark for distribution amongst Muslims, but also just simply focusing upon Mark as we have, interestingly enough, we have the smallest amount of papyrological data for Mark than we do in comparison to John. But then, as I started doing that initial amount of reading that you need to do on your source materials in a doctoral program, all of a sudden I started encountering something that I saw very little discussion of in the scholarly sources. And that was the fact that when you look at the textual orientation of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts in P45, if you look it up right now, if you look up P45 and you look up some of the charts you'll find online, when it talks about text type, if you look at P66, P75, it's going to say Alexandrian. When you look at P45, it says mixed. Well, what do you mean mixed? And what I started realizing is, it seems, and the first portion of my study for the next year or so, the first portion of my study is going to be establishing this. It seems that the scribe had access to multiple streams, multiple families of texts, and chose between them. Once I realized that, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And again, one of the issues, dating as early as 180, as late as 240. It's normally put between 200 and 220. That early on, beginning of the 3rd century, a scribe having access to multiple families, even Proto-Byzantine readings, and choosing between them? This is contemporaneous with Origen's work. Could this have been part of that work? So what this does is it raises the question, could this be the one papyri that allows us to shine a light farther back into the transmission history of the text in the New Testament? It doesn't seem like any other papyrus that currently in our possession. Something could happen tomorrow and change that. But right now, it seems to like one of the only sources we have that might allow us to shine a light backwards if we can demonstrate that there are these multiple sources from which this scribe is drawing. I've bitten off a huge task here. Huge task. Why do it? Well, you all know I've always loved textual criticism. And even my Greek professor told me that he could tell immediately early on with the questions I was asking about textual criticism in first year Greek that was an area that I was going to be working in. That was going to be something that was just part of my DNA. And I think God gives you interests and builds you in such a way to fulfill his purposes. I can't think of a greater contribution that I personally could make to the field of apologetics and to the, well, to use the terminology of the Apostle Paul, the establishment of the gospel, than to complete this program in this area and to equip believers to an even deeper level in an understanding of that extremely important period of time. Certainly Bart Ehrman recognizes how important that period of time is. That's why he's focused so much attention upon it and tried to basically say, we can't know. Well, I have the heart to do it. The question is, I ain't closing Alpha and Omega Ministries down for 3 years to do it. The vast majority of people that would be trying to do this kind of work would focus just on this. And it's 2017. And, you know, I forgot to mention, when we went to London, I did two unbelievable radio broadcasts the same day I did the dialogue with Abdullah Al-Andalusi. And Premier's studios were less than half a mile from the hotel. It was perfect. And one I did with Yusuf Ismail on crucifixion, standard stuff. But before that, I did a dialogue with Peter D. Williams on the Reformation. Peter D. Williams is a believing Roman Catholic. You may recall the program he and I did on Sola Scriptura the last time I was in London. It was an incredible conversation. It was a really, I don't know when it's going to air because Justin has raised the possibility of leaving it for October, closer to the Reformation. I'm actually sort of hoping he won't, because it was one of the best, even I think Justin recognized, it was one of the best dialogues we've ever had on Unbelievable. Why do I mention that right now? I'm not going to stop doing that kind of stuff. And Peter D. Williams wants to do a debate when I come back to London, and I want to do a debate with Peter D. Williams at his church, at a Roman Catholic church there in London. He mentioned the Marian doctrines. Let's do it. He's a believing Roman Catholic, and he's brilliant. He's really bright. It just may be the English accent, then again. No, come to think of it. So, anyway, sorry, Peter. We all know that if you speak with a British accent, you sound so much more intelligent. I can't stop doing that kind of stuff. I can't stop doing the work in Islam. I'm going to keep doing these things. How? I'm not 100% certain. I know one thing I want to do. One thing that may require your patience as the audience, but you're going to end up seeing stuff in P45. You're going to end up seeing it on the screen. You're going to be seeing Magis Fuel text, and sometimes you're going to be going, oh, man, I can tell he's been working on his material recently. And I will try to make it understandable, maybe even exciting and useful to you. But one of the things we're going to do in the next few weeks, we're going to have a discussion of the coherence genealogical methodology that is being utilized in the overhauling of the current text. I'm going to try to explain it to you. I'm not sure I understand it myself. You almost have to be a computer guru to figure some of this stuff out. But we're going to try to tackle some serious, we're going to be tackling stuff here on the program that you're not going to be getting at most seminaries. It's not, because it takes too much Greek and because they're afraid they can't actually explain it. I'm going to try, and the geeks in the channel and in the audience are going to love it. Some of the rest of you might just need to be patient. But I really think this may be the most important thing I do in my life. As far as, you know, I've told everybody I want to leave behind a body of work that will bless the church in the future. I can't think of a more unique opportunity than what I have right now to do this. And it fits perfectly But it's not about Calvinism and Arminianism. No, it's not. Are you going to stop talking about that? No. No, I'm not. But the reality is that there are lots of people that can address that subject and have in meaningful ways. What about something that's unique and lasting? Because you all know, you all recognize, I've had a commitment for a long time that whatever you do scholastically, whatever you do in scholarship, it has to benefit the church. I want to do this to benefit the church. And you might say, it seems like a long stretch from translating all of P45 and knowing every single textual variant in it and then identifying the textual families and then asking the questions about what the sources were and there are questions about that particular scribe and how he actually approached things. I'm going to be reading stuff that will seem so esoteric that's amazing. But how's that helpful to the church? Well, you know that what I'm committed to doing is making that understandable to people. And making that foundational to our being able to, we were talking about the Dreher book, the Benedict option earlier on. Believers in the West need to understand where the Bible came from and why we can trust it over against the most massive collection of attacks upon that text that has ever been launched. I think I can help in one way to contribute to that task. And that's what's been opened up. Did I see this coming when Rudolph got in touch with us? No. No. Is it a little bit amazing that I have such a love for the people down there in South Africa, even though that nation has serious problems? The crime there is just, there are no go zones there. You just don't go there. That doesn't make me comfortable. There are places, we're driving back from Lanesia and we're slowing down at this one spot and there's a sign along the side of the thing, danger. High danger of hijacking area. Woohoo! Great. So I need prayer just for safety in those situations. But there are believers there, and the Lord's really given me a real love for the church there and the people there, and has put people in my life. Rudolph is a tremendous brother in the faith. I could not do what I'm doing without him. Pray for him and his ministry and his work as well. Did I see this coming? No. Does it fit perfectly in the realm of the work we've been doing for a long time? Sure does. Sure does. So the clock's ticking. I'm signed up as a full-time PhD student. And the neat thing is, I'm also teaching there. I'm involved with the staff. They use me to teach about apologetics and history and the whole nine yards. So I'm both, the next time I go back, I was having lunch with a fellow PhD student who's doing work on we'll wrap up here just in a second, but who's doing work on a cult that is starting right there in South Africa right now. It'd be like somebody doing a PhD on Joseph Smith in 1834. And remember Mormonism Unveiled, Little Blue Book? Remember how important that was to give us an insight into what the early Mormonism was versus that's what this guy's doing. 34 or 35. Yeah, that's my recollection. And here I am talking with this fellow student who's younger than I am. And when I come back, I'm going to be helping him with some of the Trinity, Deity of Christ issues. So, this is the third doctrine I'm working on. So I'm getting to help other people. If you can't tell how excited I am. I am very excited. I need some of you all to be excited too, because this is one of the main ways that you can, some people are like, how can we help? There's two ways you can help. I'm not smart enough to have people actually help me with the work. I have to do all of myself. So the reading, the collation, the manuscripts, all that kind of stuff. There's two areas. Yeah, I know it was E.D. Howe. I remember. Two areas. That ministry resource list, when I throw up a notification on Facebook, Twitter, if anybody sees it on Twitter, on the website, however we end up doing it. When I put stuff up there and people purchase it just almost immediately, tremendously encouraging thing. Tremendously encouraging thing. And obviously this is an area where resources can be difficult to get hold of. And when I find a way to get it, really, really helps. Really, really helps in a big way. Secondly, the travel fund. The travel fund. It's getting down there isn't cheap. And generally, we do not sit me in an economy seat. If you want me to be lecturing for 6 hours the day after I arrive and not going, I've got to be able to get there in one piece. And you'll notice here I'm sitting 40 hours in an airplane. Not a sore throat. I'm not sick. Remember what happened in 2005 when I first went overseas? Almost hospitalized. There are only certain ways I can do this. And one of the things here is I want to be able to get down there about every 9 months or so. So I have looked at my schedule. My schedule for this year is already ridiculous because we have the Reformation tour in September. I'm teaching in Wittenberg, somewhere in the Czech Republic. I need to learn to say the name. Never been there before. And in Kiev next month. Well, okay, not April, May. We've got the debate against Iglesia Ni Cristo in April. Speaking a number of churches in Colorado in July. Two trips to Dallas in October. Yeah, this year's already crazy. And as I was looking at the schedule, the only way I was going to be able to get back down there to South Africa, meet with Dr. Jordan, do more teaching for Podge, is to sneak a trip in August. So I already preached the first two Sundays in August in my church. We need to find a way the last 2 weeks, which only gives me a couple of weeks before the Reformation thing, to get down to South Africa through London. And we have the opportunity to possibly do something with Peter D. Williams in London. We've got to, in other words, I want to utilize these trips as opportunities to continue doing the debates, continue doing the things that we need to do along those lines. I've developed some tremendous relationships with the Muslims there in London and in the UK. And one of the issues that was brought up, I was talking with Zakir Hussain. One of the things that was said to him was, when you come to Birmingham? And I'd like to try to work that out if that's possible to do. So that all, if you want to partner with us, if you want to be a part of this, that travel fund needs to be robust and well-funded to be able to make it possible to be able to do these things, to get to the places we need to go. And in other words, even when I'm going down there to do the work, to be able to do the extra work of doing the debates, presenting the gospel, even while doing this at the same time. That's the only way I can see how to do it. I see you have a microphone in front of you, so that must mean I have to reach all the
way. You need to put that thing in your ear, otherwise it's not going to do either one of us any good. If I just tell folks, you need to know how these things work.
Hold on, it's all wrapped up. Okay.
So, yeah.
And for some reason, I can't hear through the window today.
Yeah, well, you need to be able to hear this. Some folks have noticed that we're closing the bookstore.
Yes.
But we're not really closing the bookstore. We're moving it over to Amazon.com. And what that's going to do is help me be able to spend more time and energy working on the website in order to keep up with your ongoings. And
my ongoings.
The things going on with you.
Like, is that like efforting?
The ongoings.
Yes.
And that's right. You're efforting. You're continual efforting. You walked right into that. Just thank you. Anyway,
there will be punishment.
The travel fund, those things we've been using the Magento shopping cart for, all those are going to move over to a WordPress equivalent. And the website that you see, all that is being driven through WordPress. And all the linking, every bit of the presentation there, that's all going to be driven through WordPress. So Magento is really what's going away. And we're letting Amazon.com fulfill the orders. I've already constructed a good bookstore there, and we'll let them take care of that. Now, I say all that to go to the links themselves, and we're going to have redirects. So if you've gone to store.aomn.org/travel.html before and donated, that's going to work in the future. That's going to translate and move you right over to the new interface, and it's going to look pretty much the same as it did before and function the same as it did before.
There isn't to make it as easy as possible.
That is the idea. Now, we have had some folks, you know, you'll notice as you read the thing there, our preference in donation is send us a check. In fact, the preference in donation is do online banking and have the bank send us a check, which is actually using their account number, not yours. But don't let me get distracted here. We've had a few folks that have picked up on the need for the travel, and they just put the word travel on the check somewhere, like in the account number or whatever, and that's a designated gift, and that goes directly into the travel fund. So when I see those come in, I put them directly into the travel account, every dollar, every dime, and that helps. But that account after this particular trip might have a negative $1 or $2 left in it.
Oh.
So we've got to rebuild it. And one of the things that I'm trying to listen to folks as they're communicating with me as to how they want this to look and work. Some folks have said you need to set a goal of how much you need to raise for that account to be where you want it to be. And so you need to rewrite the pages and reflect that, the whole nine yards. The bottom line is, when folks donate to that travel fund, there are expenses that are in addition to what the folks that bring you in are able to afford.
Yeah.
And South Africa is an impoverished nation. We don't look to them, folks, to pay your way down there. We pay the freight. We take care of that, and that is an expensive amount of money. But the point is, we're in a sense, there's a mission going on there.
The funny thing is, Rudolph has told me about how the Word Faith guys will come down there and will just absolutely abuse these people. I can guarantee you, the numbers we're talking about are tiny in comparison to what those guys rip people off of down there. It's a sick and saddening thing. But anyway, so yes, the link is still there, and eventually it'll have a different look to it and things like that. So, but that's what you can do to help is the ministry resource list. Obviously, we need to keep the lights on. I can't do this if I'm having to go find a job. So the general fund is just as important. But specifically, the travel. And we will always be trying to make sure that even when I'm traveling for this, that we take advantage of the opportunities of doing other things as well that will present the gospel and will be helpful and encouraging, especially to the people where we're going into a particular area. And that's what we've been doing for a long, long time. So all of that to say, that Wednesday, I got to spend an hour and 45 minutes with Dr. Yordan, sort of in textual critical geek nirvana. It did not seem like an hour and 45 minutes. But when you're in conversation with someone like that and you're talking about, but what about this? Has anyone thought about this? What if this turns out to be the case? Ah, it was just, that was just too much fun. And oh, by the way, look at this real quick here. I happen to have, let me throw this over to you. Where'd it go? Oh, I really don't like what has happened with this thing anymore. I don't know what happened, but everything changed. And there it is. Now, you got that? There she is, folks. It's stretched out a bit. That's actually, it's much taller than that. It's sort of getting stretched. But there's my baby. There's P45. And I'm pretty certain, let me look at this. Yeah, this is the John 10 section. So this is the section I'm preaching right now. And you can actually see a textual variant, right? There, you can see some written in there, and there's a nomina sacra around here someplace, and so on and so forth. So there's P45. Now that's actually a very large section. Most of the fragments are much smaller than that, but it gives you an idea of the work. And pray for my eyesight. I'm getting more floaters as I get older. Yeah, I'm glad there's high quality version. That's up in we need to find someone up in Dublin. Would some of the Irish would like to have me come back because it's up in Dublin and I'd like to go see it. If you ever visit the Chester Beatty Library, please make sure to take an opportunity to see P45. What of it is being displayed there? It'll be exciting for you. It's exciting for me anyways. So there you go. That's what's going on. And that's why I skipped over that section to let all of you know, help to explain why you might be seeing some of the things you'll be seeing on the program. But just, even if you can't give, just pray that I will have the focus to be able to do what I need to do and keep doing the dividing line and the debates and the preaching and everything else. It's not like I sit around twiddling my thumbs a lot. I really don't. But now I have zero twiddling time whatsoever. But I appreciate your prayers, your support. And like I said, next dividing line, whenever that is, we'll let you know. We'll catch up with some of the stuff that we were going to be talking about today. And it'll be interesting and useful. We hope and pray. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. God bless.